months, 3 months, or 2 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, they may experience higher stock returns because disclosing such information can be an indicator for the firm's quality. The evidence is supportive based on the 2 months stock returns after the release of the annual reports, but the author did not find the results or the evidence for the press release, which is reported before the annual report or the financial year end. And this result is supported in the univariate and also multivariate analysis. So the sample is based on a sample of our 232 mergers and acquisitions conducted for Japanese firms from 2016. So that's the main finding of the paper. So my comments are mainly about the research design, and those designs I think should be critical to address the questions in the ISB discussion paper. The first is about the usefulness of such information. The paper analyzed are mainly based on relatively long-term windows for the stock returns. For example, the paper found the results, stronger results for the stock returns in the 2 months windows after the annual report, but did not find results in 2 months window after press release. So it looks like to be a puzzle to us because we should expect the first time announced information will be more relevant to the stock market rather than the subsequent announcement in any report. I guess the problem or possible our interpretation for this puzzle is the long-term windows, like the 2 months window, which we can find the results here, could be overlapped to each other, or there could be other kind of events occurring in this long window, which can also distort our findings and make the results hard to be interpreted. So I guess in the merger and acquisition literature, people also will measure the returns in a short window. For example, if we can measure the window in a 3-day window across the announcement of press release or annual report, we probably can avoid this kind of problem and to make a tester more easier to be interpreted. And probably the result could be different. We could still find some results in the short windows also for the press release. Okay. So that's my first comment to test the usefulness of the MA objective information. The second comment I'm thinking is whether we can test the short-term stock return around the announcement of the subsequent annual report. The paper tested this a similar idea using the long-term window, but I'm still thinking it would be useful to see the market reaction in a short window, which give us a cleaner test to see what's the exact response to the specific information in the merger and acquisition objectives. So for example, we can identify those firms who meet or miss the targets, then we could expect the stock market in the short term could react positively when the firm meet those targets or react negatively to the firms who miss the target, because setting up the target itself may not be a good news or bad news, right? We have to look at the subsequent performance of the firm from which we can see whether the news is informative or not to the users in the short-term stock return response. And then we can regress the short-term returns around the subsequent annual reports under a few control variables, including also the firm's missing or meeting the targets, to see whether such information is useful to the to the investors in the capital market. My last comment is about the also I think just we see our the presentation by Yoshiaki saying that the concern for ISB is sometimes the texture information could be boilerplate, and because the sample is not very large, we can see there are only more than it's around 230 merge acquisitions. We probably can dig further into the data to see whether we can classify those descriptions into the generic versus non-direct information. So we may expect we can have strong market reaction to the non-generic information and leading to a strong market reactions, right? So because if you provide more specific information to a firm rather than provide some general information similar to other firms, you may expect the stock return or the market reaction could be stronger. So that's all my comments. Sometimes it depends on the data availability, right? So if the firm does not provide information we can use, maybe some of those comments cannot be feasible. But I think in general, that's a very interesting paper, provide a very important policy implications. I enjoy the reading of the paper. So that's my discussion.
Okay, thank you very much for a clear and constructive, some interesting suggestions there. Now we have our IASB discussant and my colleague, Rika Suzuki.
Thank you, Tom. Gloria, can you help me with sharing my slides? Thank you, Gloria. And first, thank you to Gary and Anne for coordinating this year's research forum and giving me a precious opportunity to join Professor Amano's session as a discussant. Thank you to Tom Scott for chairing this session, and thank you to Lily for thoughtful comments. Most importantly, thank you very much to Professor Amano for his study and today's presentation, despite being a national holiday in Japan today. I appreciate his study's contribution to our Goodwill and Impairment project. Please turn to the next slide. As he already Professor Amano already presented his study's focus on the effectiveness of Japanese companies' narrative disclosures of M&A objectives, not only in press releases, but also in financial statements. His findings of the effect of narrative disclosures about M&A objectives on the investor's decision directly relate to the ISB's objectives and proposed disclosure in the discussion paper for the Goodwill and Impairment Project. First, to understand the interaction between his study and our Goodwill and Impairment Project, I quickly explain where the ISB's Goodwill and Impairment Project is now. In the ISB's discussion paper, as Professor Amano already mentioned, the ISB aimed to explore whether entities can provide users of financial statement at a reasonable cost with more useful information about the business combinations. According to the analysis of feedback to the discussion paper, there have been mixed views on the subsequent measurement of goodwill, including whether to reintroduce amortization or not. At the same time, investors strongly support the improvement in disclosures about the M&A objectives and the subsequent performance of the acquired businesses, while we understand companies and auditors have practical concerns about the content of proposed disclosures. Based on such feedback, we tentatively decided to maintain the same objective of this project as proposed in the discussion paper and to consider the enhancement of disclosures, improvement in subsequent measurement of goodwill, and other items as a package of this project. Therefore, it is very critical for us to explore the development of enhanced disclosure requirements in this project. Currently, the project staff is investigating FAT M&A information and to what extent of the information the IFRS standard can require the entity to disclose in the year that an acquisition occurs and in the subsequent periods. Now let's move on to the Professor Amano's studies. I consider that the three findings identified in the existing accounting disclosure framework demonstrate that enhanced disclosures about M&A objectives and subsequent year's performance of acquired business could help the user's more appropriate assessment of the post-acquisition performance. In other words, his findings indicate the benefit from improved disclosure requirements in the IFRS standards regarding business combinations. His findings also help us think that the long-term achievement of the M&A objective is difficult to follow and analyzed through the disclosures currently available in public. This is because no specific particular disclosure requirement exists, which results in a lack of detailed information about the initial M&A objectives and subsequent performance of acquired businesses. How this market situation would change if the standard could improve the content and extent of information regarding the initial M&A objectives and the subsequent performance of acquired businesses. Suppose the companies provided the metrics to measure the acquired business subsequent performance in the year that the company executed the M&As and then described the subsequent year's performance by using these metrics in the post-acquisition periods. Such disclosure in the financial statement could enable the users understand how management assess the success of M&As more accurately and assess the entity's financial performance more efficiently in connection with acquired businesses. More transparency and disciplines would be added to the disclosure in the financial statements, given the information disclosed in the financial statement are subject to external audit. I found another point raised by Professor Amano very interesting. The point is that the detailed disclosure requirements could discourage management from conducting unprofitable acquisition for self-gain. Indeed, management's decisions over acquisition could be affected by more effective and transparent dialogues between management and investors. Please turn to the next slide. Now, I'd like to add a couple of observations regarding realization of the M&A objectives based on my experience as the auditor in the past. One is that in some cases, the management sets a target of acquired businesses' performance at a lower level than at the company level. For example, at the business unit level or at the segment level, a unit for measuring the subsequent performance can be smaller than the entire company. So if management objective is achieved at the lower level, say at the business unit level, all benefits from achieving the objectives might be absorbed or offset by other business operations' negative performance at the company level. Another thing is that the length of a period to realize a benefit from M&As might be longer than 2 or 3 years, depending on various factors, including M&A objectives, characteristics of businesses, structure of operations, it might take 2 or 3 years or more to just incorporate the acquired business into the acquiring company's business operations. And then actual benefit of acquisition might be realized much later after such integration. Consideration of those observations might help further analysis of this study. Let's move on to the next point. I noted that Professor, please keep in the same slide, thank you. So I noted that his study's practical concerns about enhanced disclosures. Through the discussion paper's feedback analysis, we also acknowledge the same concerns as he identified. It is beneficial for investors to understand the entity-specific information about acquisitions and the post-acquisition performance because the boilerplate disclosures can't provide useful information for users. But at the same time, same as his study, we acknowledge other stakeholders have concerns, including the risk of disclosing confidential information. Therefore, ISB, we consider it essential to strike the best balance of investors' benefit and costs and risks of preparers. That is the reason we are investigating to identify the proper content and the extent of the information about M&A and the post-acquisition performance. We consider it really necessary for us to do additional outreach to get feedback from our stakeholders. Lastly, I would like to ask two questions to Amano-san. First is about the interaction of the potential enhanced IFRS disclosure and your findings. Suppose the ISB finalized the disclosure requirement about the M&A objectives and then the post-acquisition performance. Do you think that the information required by such new disclosure requirements would affect the findings of your study? And if you think so, how would such information affect your findings? Second question is about the interaction of gap differences and your study. As Professor Amano already described, the study targets Japanese listed companies that use the Japanese gap. Because his study's focus was the impact of disclosure, the difference between Japanese gap and IFRS standards would not significantly affect the relevance of this study's contribution to our project. Still, there are some gap differences between the Japanese gap and IFRS standards. For example, Japanese gap requires both amortization and impairment test, and also it requires presenting the extraordinary income and losses separately outside the operating profit on the face of the statement of financial performance. So, do you think such gap differences could affect the outcome and implication of your study? And do you have any advice for other researchers if they want to do similar research in different markets where the company uses the IFRS standards? With that, I would like to conclude my discussion, comments, and questions. Professor Amano, thank you very much for your important study for our project.
Tom, you're on mute. Tom, you're on mute.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. So thank you very much, Rika. I thought I'd click the thing and it bounced back on me for that excellent discussion and for also bringing in some of the what we're doing in an effort to improve this area. But I think... I'll give Professor Amano an opportunity to comment on the discussants and in general, and also with respect to the two specific questions that Rika asked, you might want to think about addressing them now as well, but I'll leave it to you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Scott. And I'd like to sincerely appreciate the helpful comments from the two discussants, Professor Dai and Ms. Suzuki. I really appreciate it. So in response to their comments and questions, I'd like to answer to not all, but some of them. So first, Professor Dai pointed out that the study should use the short-term stock returns. And I understand that the most common way in prior literature to measure the post-acquisition performance is to use such short-term announcement return based on the daily stock prices right after the announcement. However, that there is some trade-off in using short-term returns because as so in chat, I think Professor Motoki pointed out there is some phenomena called earnings drift, and therefore it shows that it may take some time for investors to digest all the information available and reflect into the stock prices correctly. And actually in the literature regarding mergers and acquisitions, many studies reported that the short-term stock returns are not consistent with the long-term stock returns or accounting returns. And I would like to introduce one prior study that conducted a meta-analysis of the post-acquisition performance, and the results suggested the acquiring firm's abnormal returns are positive on the day when the deal is announced, but it decreases as time goes on, and after 1 week or later, it tends to be negative on average. And therefore, so it may take some several weeks or several months for investors to digest all the information. And this is why I used 2 months as a short-term event window. But I understand that still it is important and meaningful to examine the short-term reactions of the stock market. So I'd like to suggest for maybe for future research to examine this point by another alternative methodology, such as making some questions to the investors about how and why they make decision, and also make some experiments by showing some mock financial statements to the investors and observe how they make valuation. So, Amber, let me think about how to incorporate your idea. And also the Professor Dai mentioned the idea of examining the firms that meet the targets and fail to meet the targets. And this is a very difficult one because in many cases, or almost all the cases, the firms do not disclose the concrete number or goal of their indicators. So this study uses just keywords related to profitability, efficiency, or growth, but usually they do not mention any specific percentage or something they can achieve. And therefore, in using the data I have, I think it might be difficult to test that point. And therefore, I conducted an additional analysis by dividing the firms into 2 subsamples, simply dividing by the improve or failing to improve the financial indicators. And I think that's the best guess at the current moment, but let me think about how to incorporate your idea. And finally, Professor Dai mentioned the non-generic information would be useful. And that's, I think, a very insightful comment. And right now, I do not have any answer how to analyze that point, but let me think about it. So thank you very much, Professor Dai, for your helpful comments. Next, in response to the comments and questions from Ms. Suzuki. First, as she pointed out, this study uses performance indicators based on the overall firm performance, not the specific units where M&A occurred. And therefore, the financial indicators do not necessarily reflect the specific result of the M&A. And this is one limitation of using such financial indicators. And maybe in future research, researchers can more accurately analyze this point by using the metrics of the post-acquisition performance that are required to disclose under the new requirements. So after the implementation of the new requirements, researchers can more accurately focus on this issue. And similarly, as she said, the effect of mergers and acquisition can be realized in longer time frame, like maybe 5 or 10 years. But this study limited the observation period up to 3 years. And this is because if the observation period gets longer, the relationship between the specific M&A and overall firm performance gets weaker. But still, of course, it is worthwhile to observe such longer term performance. And therefore, this is also also analyzed after the implementation of the new requirements using the metrics to monitor post-acquisition performance. So this is also left to the future research. And then about her question, the first question is about the new, whether or not the new requirements can affect the firm's behavior or the stock market's reaction. And yeah, it is possible for the new requirements to affect the firm's behavior and also the stock market's reaction, because if firms are required to disclose more specific objectives and also post-acquisition performance, they would be willing to disclose achievable goal rather than the vague keywords. And therefore, and also the actual behavior of their mergers and acquisition can be varied, because they care about the post-acquisition performance and the reactions from the stock market. And the second question is about the impact of the differences in accounting standards. And as she said, this study uses a sample of Japanese firms implementing Japanese GAAP. And therefore, it is not clear whether the results varied or not when using the sample from different countries. And therefore, it is left for future research using a sample from another country implementing another accounting standards. And one possibility is the differences in accounting procedures, such as goodwill amortization, can affect the reactions of the stock market after acquisitions. And also, as I mentioned, the cultural difference, such as the preference for conservative accounting, can also affect the stock market's reactions after M&A. So basically, I hope these answers to some of the questions and comments. So again, thank you very much, Professor Dai and Ms. Suzuki. And now I would like to answer to the other questions. So first, from Victoria Cloud, is there a difference between the press release information? It's possible, because at maximum, from the press releases to the financial statements, at maximum, there is a one-year period. And therefore, the content of the description can be varied due to the time elapsed. And I think, I'm not sure how to analyze this point, but this is only my intuition, because this study is conducted by hand-collected method, which means I read all of the financial statements and press releases of the 232 transactions. And my impression is the description in press release is too long. I did not want to read all the press releases, actually. So I think the such too long descriptions is not meaningful investors. It's my guess. And therefore, so as she pointed out, it is very possible that the content itself of the description can vary among the press releases and financial statements. So thank you for your comments, and let me think about how to incorporate your idea. Next, Professor Motoki, thank you for your inputs about earnings drift. I agree with this in this point. And also from Victoria Cloud, is there evidence of important treatments for Japanese goodwill in situations? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am not sure if there is a strong evidence in this point, but I think it's highly likely. So mergers and acquisitions in Japan are different in many points compared with the US or the European countries. And the one difference is the acquisition premium or transaction value tends to be much, much lower than the US or the European countries. I think the average acquisition premium in the US is about 30%, and the average premium in Japan is 10%. So it's very different in terms of the value. And also the negative goodwill is very common in Japanese transactions, which also supports the acquisition premium is much lower in Japan. And therefore, in such cases, it it's very common that the synergies is very small or not realized. And I at this moment, I'm not sure how this difference impacts the post-acquisition performance or reactions from the stock market, but I would think about it. Thank you for your comments again. Again from Victoria Cloud. Okay, yeah, I understand. Yeah, that's possible. So yeah, I would incorporate that into my research. Thank you for your helpful comments.
Okay, thank you. Do we have other questions out there or from anyone or even the two discussants? I have a question or two if nobody else comes up with any.